morning, ladies and gentlemen. We'll hear argument first in the case of United States against Berry. Ms. Sorensen.
Good morning. May it please the court, my name is Colleen Sorensen, and I represent the defendant, Jeffrey R. Berry. Mr. Berry was convicted on one count of wire fraud after representing himself at trial. His conviction should be reversed because his self-representation raises serious constitutional questions. In our brief, we raised three independent grounds for reversal. The first of these issues was the district court's application of the wrong standard of competency to Mr. Berry's request to proceed pro se, and its corresponding failure to exercise the discretion granted to it by Brooks and by Indiana v. Edwards. In the years preceding Mr. Berry's trial, he made a series of bizarre statements that caused even the district court to question his competency to proceed pro se, or his competency to proceed to stand trial. Because of that, the district court ordered a competency hearing in which he was found competent to stand trial. In that hearing, he was expressly found competent to assist counsel, and it was found that he understood the nature of the proceedings against him. But that exam did not address the question of whether he was competent to represent himself at trial.
These are very difficult issues for district judges. Had the judge here forced a lawyer on Mr. Berry, we'd have another appeal raising that issue, wouldn't we?
I think as long as the district court made the right inquiries and exercised the discretion that is granted to him under the cases of Brooks and Indiana v. Edwards, that he would have done the right thing. And even if there was an appeal, he would most likely be affirmed.
Well, this one might be affirmed, too, but it just presents such a problem for the district court, because here if you force a lawyer on this fellow, and this is a pretty sophisticated fraud scheme that he was involved in, and he just rejects that and puts up a big fuss and all that sort of thing, then you have more problems, don't you? I'm trying to put myself in the position of what the district court is supposed to do in a case like this. He demands to represent himself, says a lot of bizarre things, but the doctors found him competent to stand trial. The judge made a finding that he's competent to stand trial. It seems to me no matter what he does, somebody's going to be here arguing that it was the wrong course of action to take.
Right. I think that the Supreme Court has said in Indiana v. Edwards that a district court is protected from that problem by the discretion that it has to make the determination of whether a defendant has the mental capacity to proceed to trial and represent himself. And so the deferential standard of review essentially protects the district court.
I'm puzzled, counsel, by this argument that there's a difference between the capacity to stand trial and the capacity to represent oneself. That was, of course, the argument made and rejected in Godinez against Moran. Are you asking us to disagree with the Supreme Court?
Not at all. I think that Indiana v. Edwards makes clear that Godinez is limited.
Edwards says that a jurisdiction can have a higher or different standard, not that it must. And indeed, if it had said that it must, then it would have had to overrule Godinez. Your problem is that in federal court, there's a statutory right to represent oneself, so we can't adopt a higher standard without saying that that statute is unconstitutional. So here we are with Godinez, one would think.
I read Indiana v. Edwards to actually say that Godinez is limited to a situation where a defendant is waiving counsel in order to plead guilty. The court actually said there's a critical difference between...
I don't understand that. Godinez was a case in which the defendant waived his right to counsel. Edwards holds, pretty clearly, that a state may adopt a higher standard of competence for waivers of right to counsel and waivers of right to stand trial and so on, but not that it must. And the question I'm asking you is how, given 18 U.S.C. 1654, which says that everyone has a right to represent himself in federal court, a federal judge could do anything other than apply Godinez in a case like this.
I guess there would be two points I would try and make in response to that. The first would be, I think Brooks actually interprets Godinez more narrowly than that, and states that Godinez does not hold that competency to stand trial and waiver of counsel are the same. My second point would be that under Indiana v. Edwards, makes fairly clear that allowing an incompetent defendant to represent himself at trial raises constitutional due process issues.
And of course it raises issues. Those issues were considered by the Supreme Court in Godinez. Right? They've been considered. What do you want us to do with Godinez?
I think Godinez is limited to the situation by Edwards where someone is going to plead guilty. And the court in Indiana specifically said that the critical difference between...
I don't think that's a reasonable understanding of Edwards. It's not what the court said it was holding in Edwards. Where does this understanding that Godinez has been limited in some way come from?
The language in Indiana v. Edwards, it says the critical difference between Godinez and Edwards is the fact that representing oneself at trial takes a different set of capacities than pleading.
Well, why is that necessarily true? Because encompassed in the finding that you're competent to stand trial is a finding that you're competent to assist in your own defense.
Right, but assisting in your own defense potentially requires lower functioning than actually presenting a defense. When you actually...
It sounds like you're just asking us to take issue with Godinez. These were the very arguments presented to the Supreme Court in Godinez. And you might remember that in Godinez, the Supreme Court agreed with a decision of this circuit. Right? We got there first, so you're asking us to overrule our own approach with which the Supreme Court agreed in Godinez. Is that the only way you can win this appeal?
Well, no, I think there's a waiver issue, too. I think that it's not clear from the record at all that Mr. Berry understood the dangers of self-representation at the time he proceeded to trial and waived his right to counsel.
Well, I don't understand why that's important either. The statute, it's 28 U.S.C. 1654, which I notice your brief doesn't mention, says that everybody has an absolute right to represent himself in federal court. Why does exercise of that right depend on understanding dangers or something like that? It looks like it's just an absolute right. You can represent yourself if you want. You don't have to persuade the judge to let you represent yourself. The statute says you have a right to represent yourself.
I apologize for not considering that statute in our brief. I understand Seventh Circuit precedent and Supreme Court precedent to hold that any waiver of the right to counsel must be knowing and intelligent. And it's our position that Mr. Berry's waiver was not knowing and intelligent. And part of that was his bizarre behavior in the record, which I think indicated that he failed to really understand what he was getting himself into. And in this court's decision in Sandals, for example, this court held that when a defendant is exhibiting that kind of behavior, the district court should engage in some sort of reality testing. And the district court did not engage in any sort of reality testing. I think his background, too, weighs against the finding of waiver because all we have in the record about his background are his own statements. And even the competency exam itself seems to indicate that he tends to exaggerate his own credentials.
Well, that was, as far as his background goes, there was no history of any mental illness, was there?
According to his own statements, there was no history.
Besides his own statements, he'd never been hospitalized, never been treated, never had any sort of documented history of mental problems, other than making some bizarre statements here. But He was also kind of a con man, wasn't he? That,
you know, I think we don't know from the record whether he was telling the truth or not. I mean, we know that he wasn't telling the truth, but we don't know if he believed what he was saying or not. And it seems fairly clear that the district court didn't think he was capable of representing himself. At trial, based on the district court's own comments, he called it legal suicide. And he indicated that even if Mr. Berry had a defense, that he wouldn't be able to represent himself or be able to convey that most likely to the jury. He said that in the colloquy.
Well, his way of operating is somewhat similar to cases that have come to light recently, haven't they? Madoff and the other swindler, so-called. In other words, in Madoff, according to news reports, he never bought any stock, although he was purporting to do so. He had a special scheme. Is that similar to this one?
Well, I think Madoff is probably a little bit more sophisticated than
Well, that's true.
Than
Mr.
Berry.
Right, but it amounts to the same thing, though, doesn't it?
I think the question is whether Mr. Berry actually believed that he had access to this funding, and he believed his own lies. If he believed his own lies, he potentially had an actual defense below that he was unable to present. If you have no further questions now.
Mm-hmm. Thank you very much. Mr. Grimes.
Good morning. May it please the Court, Steve Grimes on behalf of the United States. The record here simply does not support a finding that Jeffrey Berry suffered from any mental illness whatsoever. With that threshold issue not met, the Supreme Court's decision in Edwards is not even applicable here. A court-appointed psychologist issued a report which found, quote, that there is no indication that defendant was experiencing symptoms associated with a major mental disorder. And on the next page, page 10 of that report, found that Mr. Berry does not appear to be experiencing symptoms consistent with a mental disease.
Who requested the mental competency exam?
That request was first mentioned by the government in a court filing based on some statements that the defendant had been making in the pretrial proceedings. Based on that request, the judge then held a hearing, and at the outcome of that hearing, requested that Mr. Berry be subjected to this competency evaluation.
Was the defendant in custody at the time?
He was not in custody at the time. Once the judge issued his order, defendant went into custody for purposes of the mental competency exam.
To Springfield?
I'm sorry?
Did he go to Springfield for the exam?
I'm not sure of that, Your Honor. But when the competency exam results came back, the judge evaluated them, and he stated on the record that he had resolved his bona fide concerns about defendant's competency. And at that point, he ordered defendant released again back on the conditions of his bond without an order that defendant be subjected to mental competency testing. In addition to this lack of mental competency issue in the record, defendant was also subjected to a serious and pointed admonition about the risks and the dangers of proceeding pro se. The district court judge went into great detail about the dangers of self-representation, about the issues and the areas of law of which defendant had no knowledge and which his proceeding pro se would endanger himself. Defendant heard these statements. He indicated on the record that he understood them. He made statements at trial further indicating that he understood the dangers of proceeding pro se. At trial, defendant relied on a standby counsel. He made other statements, which, again, concerned that he knew what he was up against. He knew what charges he was up against, but he proceeded pro se anyway. The judge found at the end of the trial, on the record, that the reason he believed, after examining and observing defendant's conduct over the course of 4 years, that the reason the district court believed that defendant proceeded pro se to trial was so that he could essentially scan the system and be able to testify from the lectern without being subjected to cross-examination. These are all factors the court is to consider in determining whether defendant knowingly and voluntarily waived his right to counsel. And unless there are further questions from the court, I'd ask that you affirm the conviction.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
Ms. Sorensen, anything further?
Yes,
wanted to draw the court's attention to the language that I was relying on. But first, there's the language at 2385 in Edwards, which says that Godinez, his ability to conduct defense at trial was expressly not at issue. And that's where I read Indiana as really limiting Godinez to that, to its facts. And then in Brooks v. McCautry, at 10:11, the court mentions that Brooks is arguing that the standard for competency to stand trial and for competence to waive counsel are identical, and this court said, but we doubt both the premise and the conclusion of that argument. So, I have nothing further.
Thank you very much. Ms. Sorensen, we appreciate your willingness and that of your law firm.